From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida colleges and universities are, so far, experiencing only modest protests in support of Gaza as the war with Israel drags on.
Is this the only way we're going to get them to stop committing these atrocious acts on Palestinians that are just trying to live their lives?
Also this week, Florida's six-week abortion ban takes effect in days. We'll see how it will impact those on both sides.
We never know what to expect from day to day, so we're always on our toes, ready to go.
We'll also dive into the state's growing unhoused crisis and find out if young voters hold the key to Democratic victory in the upcoming presidential election. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. Student protests continue across college campuses in the United States, but here in Florida, those clashes are more muted lately. And as Lynn Hatter reports, the state, mainly in the persona of Governor Ron DeSantis, is vowing to keep it that way.
Recently, a small pro-Palestinian protest at Florida State University got disrupted by lawn work and the campus sprinkler system, which doused protesters and led to accusations by the FSU chapter of Students for a Democratic Society that the interruption was intentional. The school said it wasn't. The group's tents were also removed due to anti-camping ordinances at the school. Still, a few days later, a few dozen students were back at it.
Hey!
We're over 200 days into a genocide right now. And, you know, I think it's the duty, it's the number one political issue right now. It's like the duty of all moral people to pressure their politicians, their institutions to stand against this.
Joel Nunez is the president of the FSU SDS chapter, which is not a recognized group by the school.
It's especially important that we demand our institutions here to stop, because it's the only way we're going to get them to stop committing these atrocious acts on Palestinians that are just trying to live their lives.
This protest has been relatively muted compared to others that have seen scores of students get arrested at schools like Columbia and Yale. A similar protest at the University of Florida also saw a more muted response amid warnings from administrators that people participating could face suspension and banishment from campus if they violated a host of rules. That stance is being backed by Governor Ron DeSantis, who's been critical of people protesting against Israel and supporting Palestine.
Some of the stuff with the Hamas, I think, is absurd that someone would go out and demonstrate on that. But, you know, when you're chasing Jewish students around, when you're not letting a Jewish professor enter a building, when you're targeting people like that, that's not free speech. I mean, that's harassment. That violates appropriate conduct. And yet at Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost.
DeSantis calls leaders of those institutions weak.
Yeah, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled when you're doing that stuff. And you know what? The minute people start to face consequences, you are not going to see this nonsense going on.
Last year, the state tried to shut down the student group Students for Justice in Palestine, but the courts ruled in favor of those organizations. Students are demanding that their colleges and universities divest from Israel and groups that back it, amid the ongoing war between the terrorist group Hamas, which rules Palestine, and Israel. The two have been at war since October 7th, when Hamas terrorists attacked a music festival in Israel, launched rockets, and killed more than 1,100 people. More than 250 were taken hostage. As a result, more than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed in the conflict and nearly 2 million displaced. I'm Lynn Hatter.
About a dozen states ban nearly all abortions. A few others limit them to just the first 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is set to become law in Florida May 1st. That's down from the 15 weeks allowed currently. Regan McCarthy talks with people on both sides of the issue who are preparing for the impact of the new law.
Every day feels
like another punch to the gut.
Chelsea Daniels is a staff physician with Planned Parenthood in South Florida.
Every day that I'm in clinic and seeing patients and having to inform them about this ban and just watch the panic on their face, it makes you realize just how bans like this are so, so, so targeted and can change the trajectory of someone's life.
Florida requires people to wait at least 24 hours between their first consultation and an abortion, and sometimes they don't even know they're pregnant for weeks. Now, in these last days before the 6-week ban, appointments are filling up and staff are working overtime.
We recognize as healthcare providers and medical professionals that this is essential medical care. And so we're going to do everything we can to provide that care for as long as we're legally allowed to do so.
The 6-week ban will allow exceptions for rape or fatal fetal abnormalities. And like the current 15-week ban, it allows abortions in order to save the life of the pregnant person. But some doctors have already been hesitant to provide that care. And Daniels worries the new rule will make that even harder.
Every day I'm seeing someone who is, I'm sitting there trying to do the calculus of, I think that this pregnancy is putting my patient's life at risk, but they live in Florida. And so what are my options?
One option will be for people to travel out of state.
Our director of case management is kind of become a travel agent at this point.
McKenna Kelly is a board member with the Tampa Bay Abortion Fund. They help with things like hotel rooms, plane tickets, the cost of the appointment at an out-of-state clinic. She says they're trying to raise money and expand their network of clinics ahead of May 1st.
We're not going to be able to help everyone, and that goes for every fund. And that's really unfortunate, and that's what we want people to understand.
Meanwhile, people on the other side of the issue are also scrambling to prepare for the 6-week ban, like at Bundle of Hope Adoption Family Services in North Florida.
Every day that we wake up, we never know what to expect from day to day, so we're always on our toes, ready to go.
Glenda Richardson Carr is the group's founder and CEO. She considers herself pro-life and agrees with the 6-week ban. She says her goal is to support and empower birth mothers who are trying to figure out their options under the new law.
So I would ask them to give me a chance to show them an option of how parenting would look in their future and how adoption will look in the future. Can we work it out together?
Following the overturn of federal rights to abortion in Roe v. Wade, Richardson Carr says she's seen more birth mothers seeking help with adoption, and she expects to see even more once the ban goes into place. And it says that adoption agencies around the country have lists of families waiting to adopt.
I have no doubt we could take every birth mom that would like to place a child for adoption and find them a family. Absolutely.
May 1st will not end the abortion battle. Andrew Scherville heads the group Florida Voice for the Unborn. He'd like to see an end to all abortion in Florida and sees this as a step in that direction.
I'm hoping and praying that at least half the abortion centers in the state of Florida will effectively shut down.
But it's not clear how long the new ban will last. In November, Florida voters will decide whether to enshrine the right to abortion in the state constitution. People on both sides are gearing up for a vote they say will impact the abortion landscape throughout the Southeast. Here's Dr. Chelsea Daniels at Planned Parenthood in Miami.
I can't wait for November. I hope that everyone listening can't wait for November and feels really motivated to go out, and we'll show them who's boss in just a few months.
To pass, the amendment will need approval from 60% of the people who turn out at the polls. I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
Coming up on Capitol Report on this Confederate Memorial Day, and yes, it's still an official observance in Florida, we'll talk about other monuments to the lost cause.
The South could do no wrong, and they were just invaded by these evil Northerners and
Florida's unhoused population keeps growing, and there are those who are using this fact to political advantage.
It's wrong. These folks are not pawns to be used to make a political point.
President Biden still has a lead over former President Trump among young people. Florida Democrats hope those young people will give the incumbent the winning edge in November.
It's really important for me to be a young Democrat, especially a young woman coming from the state of Florida, what's going on right now with our right to health care being under attack.
And Florida expands its DNA sampling to include everybody who's arrested.
Unfortunately, some of those cases go unsolved, and eventually they're given the term or the title cold case.
Well, today in Florida, it's Confederate Memorial Day. It's one of several Confederate holidays that remain on the state books. Even, as Tristan Wood reports, fights continue to be waged over whether Confederate monuments, symbols, and holidays should have a place in the public square.
Florida currently observes three holidays honoring the Confederacy: Confederate Memorial Day, Confederate General Robert E. Lee's birthday, and the birthday of Confederate President Jefferson Davis. Most of these holidays have been in state law for around 100 years, though they aren't widely recognized or even known. And more than 70 Confederate monuments still stand in the state, including one on the Florida Capitol grounds. The Confederate battle flag was on the seal of the Florida Senate until 2015.
Most of these monuments, like I said, went up throughout Florida and throughout the South from 1890 to 1930.
Seth Whites, a Florida historian and professor at Dalton State College, says the holidays and most of the monuments were enacted during a period of intense violence against African Americans freed after the Civil War.
That is also the time that Florida and the South had the highest number of lynchings. And so there is a correlation there. Florida had, from 1890 to 1930, Florida had the highest numbers of lynchings per capita, proportionally, percentage-wise, out of any other southern state.
The other period where monuments were most frequently put up were between the 1950s and 1960s, around the time of the Civil Rights Movement. White says the monuments were a symptom of efforts to further white supremacy and the lost cause myth, or the idea that slavery wasn't the main cause of the Civil War.
They were monuments to this bygone era where the South could do no wrong, and they were just invaded by these evil northerners and that sort of thing. And Florida was the same in all of that. And you see it not just in actual monuments. You see it in the names of cities and towns and counties and schools during this entire time being named after Confederate generals, politicians, and so forth.
Some historians argue that not all of the Confederate monuments were put up to further the lost cause narrative. Bob Holliday, president of the Tallahassee Historical Society, says the monument at Florida's Capitol was put up in 1882 and doesn't carry the messaging and purpose of monuments that were put up later.
Nowhere on it is the word Confederate. Nowhere on it is the word lost cause. Nowhere on it is the word glorious dead. I mean, it's a grave marker, and it was put up by the women of Leon County to commemorate Leon County soldiers who died in the war.
Heated debate on what should happen to remnants of the Confederacy in Florida's public squares is still ongoing. Dozens of Confederate memorials have been removed around the state in the last decade in response to racially motivated mass shootings and police-involved killings. A bill put forward during last legislative session would have protected all historical monuments in Florida from being removed, including Confederate ones. The bill eventually died after admitted white supremacists spoke in favor of the bill at a committee stop. Fort Myers Republican Senator Jonathan Martin, the bill's sponsor, said at the time he wanted to protect the erasure of history from the public square, even the aspects which may be painful or uncomfortable.
If there was good from that statue or the bad, but either of those are things that we can learn from as a society to make us stronger and to unite us.
Democratic Senator Tracy Davis opposed the bill, arguing that Confederate monuments are meant as a symbol of white supremacy.
These were meant to degrade black people, black residents all through Duval County, and to show them in bronze and iron that they were lesser.
Holliday says he supports keeping the monuments up, but believes plaques and new monuments should be erected, giving full context to the reasons each specific memorial was erected. He thinks removing them would signal that Floridians are afraid of their history.
To me, they're a sign of guilt. I mean, they're a sign of guilt and culpability, really, on both sides. And taking down these monuments basically gives both sides, I think, an excuse to pretend that something as bad as 750,000 dead didn't happen.
Weitz wants the monuments and holidays removed, but not destroyed. He says they should be relocated to museums instead of the public square locations where they currently reside.
These monuments, whether you are honoring Confederate dead or anything like that, they do stand for an institution, a government, a military that supported the institution of slavery, supported white supremacy. And what's happened over the past 160 years since the Civil War definitely shows that these sorts of monuments can be used to fight against equality and social justice and integration.
Despite his personal thoughts, White says the polarization of national and state politics and intense conversations around free speech likely means the fights around Confederate memorials won't go away anytime soon. I'm Tristan Wood.
Homelessness is rampant across the state and nation. Service providers say they're seeing greater numbers of those in need. Florida, with its warm weather, has the third highest number of unhoused people in the U.S. And as Margie Menzel reports, some are wondering if there are other reasons why people are coming here.
On a single night in January 2023, there were nearly 31,000 homeless people in Florida, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And across the state, communities are preparing for a new Florida law that takes effect on October 1st. It prevents cities and counties from allowing people to sleep on public property. In Tallahassee, social service organizations like the Kearney Center Shelter are already seeing an influx of new clients and facing the stark reality that more will be coming.
We won't have the capacity to take care of our own.
Sonia Wilson is the center's executive director. The center has seen an influx of people coming from out of state, and it started charging them $10 a night to stay. Wilson is worried about the impact of the center's ability to care for people in its own service area.
So this isn't to penalize or be ugly. This is all in an effort to use the facility what it's meant for, and that is our community. Putting our community first, and I make no apologies about that.
She says she's not talking about people from nearby Georgia.
I'm talking about people from New York, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Pittsburgh, Illinois, individuals that are literally coming here with the clothes on their back, a bus ticket here, and a Greyhound, and then they are given directions to come directly here to the Kearney Center.
Those are all blue states. Rick Kearney, the founder of the center and its board president, told the Tallahassee Democrat he suspects political motivations may be at play because Republican Governor Ron DeSantis lives in the capital city. But it's just a hunch, he said.
Even though their bus ticket might have originated in a blue state, that doesn't necessarily mean they're from a blue state. They may have just been passing through a blue state. It's really way too early to tell unless we were to really do some deeper data analysis.
He says the reasons more people are coming vary and that some might be immigrants.
I think there's some of that, but I think this is population overflow, especially amongst the homeless individuals, where these cities from which they are coming are at their capacity, and it found it more economical to put them on a bus than to sustain them. I don't know that there's a motive other than save money.
It's not unusual for local municipalities and shelters to send unhoused people away. The Kearney Center and other local agencies do the same, offering bus tickets to people to communities where they have relatives or the hope of a job. The Kearney Center recently sent a family of nine to South Florida, in part because the center doesn't accept children. Karen Woodall runs the Florida People's Advocacy Center in Tallahassee. She acknowledges that another state could have sent people here because DeSantis sent a plane load of undocumented immigrants to Martha's Vineyard.
It's not outside of the realm of possibility that other states that our governor has been flying immigrants too, and dropping them off might be doing some quid pro quo. And both are wrong. It's wrong. These folks are not pawns to be used to make a political point.
But neither she nor Carney can say for sure what did or didn't happen. In many ways, Tallahassee is both an outlier and an example of the statewide problem. It's long attracted unhoused people because it has resources to help, coupled with its geography. Jonna Coleman is the executive director of the Big Bend Continuum of Care, which oversees homeless services in 8 counties.
We're in a high traffic transient area, so we've always seen people come in, whether that's because of our closeness to I-10, whether, you know, it's speculated that people are told that there's like free for all at Kearney Center, you know, whatever the reasoning may be, we've seen that.
She agrees that people searching for housing do best by looking in their own areas and should contact the COC there.
Because, you know, our focus is on the people who are currently in our system, and those people are prioritized accordingly. And if you come in, then you become, you know, a little bit later on down that list, right?
In Florida, according to HUD data, the numbers of families with children experiencing homelessness grew 21.6%, or 1,400 families, from 2022 to 2023.
The people who are most affected are those people who show up thinking that they're going to have somewhere to lay their head, not knowing that they're already coming to an already burdened community.
Coleman says she has seen a lot of cruelty in her work, and that the poorest people, the most vulnerable, are almost always the ones on the receiving end. I'm Margie Menzel.
The most recent Harvard Youth poll shows former President Donald Trump cutting into President Joe Biden's lead among voters 18 to 29 years old. It's starting to worry Democrats who are hoping to get more young voters to the polls. The Florida Party is hoping to re-engage those young voters and get them to show up in November. Florida Democrats trying to rally those voters, and while President Joe Biden still has a lead over Donald Trump with 18 to 29-year-olds, it's not as big as it was 4 years ago. Younger voters are much more split in their opinions between the two candidates than they used to be.
Democrats are kind of hemorrhaging my demographic right now, young people, and I feel like someone who's 19 could speak to that demographic.
Tallahassee Community College student Lucas Luschietti is firmly Team Biden, but he admits his position isn't widely shared among his peer group. Luschietti is vying to be among the 6 people who will eventually be chosen to be a Leon County delegate to the Democratic nominating convention. Also trying to get there is Savannah Atkins, also Team Biden.
It's really important for me to be a young Democrat, especially a young woman coming from the state of Florida, what's going on right now with our right to health care being under attack.
Abortion is one of the issues some Democrats are hitching their wagon to in hopes of motivating younger voters to vote for Democrats in November. State Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried says she believes the presence of a constitutional referendum on both abortion and recreational marijuana on the Florida ballot will energize younger voters.
Florida has the largest student population outside of California, and so it's about getting on these college campuses, talking to young voters, and making sure, more importantly, that we're listening to younger voters.
But Michael Binder isn't so sure.
Yes, there's going to be some young folks in there that may not have voted if it weren't for these issues. But I don't know that it's going to be enough to necessarily put Florida in play or to make it a competitive state in the statewide races. But you will see something that looks more like traditional turnout come November.
Historically, older voters tend to vote more than younger people, and Florida Republicans out-register Democrats by nearly 900,000 people. Binder is the director of the Public Opinion Research Lab at the University of North Florida. He's just released a national poll showing former President Trump edging current President Biden by 2 percentage points among all likely voters surveyed. Bender's study shows a bit more youth support for the incumbent over his predecessor than did the Harvard survey, but there's a similar trend of declining support for Biden among younger people.
The 18 to 24s lean a little bit more toward Biden, 48, 42, but the 25-year-olds were 52 to 32 for Biden. So, you know, there's support there. But once you get over that 35 cutoff, things change.
Trump, according to that UNF poll, is ahead with that group. Still, the election remains 6 months off. That's a length of time that most politicos agree is forever in politics. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, a plan to solve cold cases in Florida is underway. Governor Ron DeSantis signed a new law that requires all inmates to submit a DNA sample to the federal government. As Adrian Andrews explains, the law is being touted as a public safety initiative to help solve thousands of unsolved mysteries.
Every person that gets arrested for any crime in Florida will need to undergo an oral DNA swab. The data will be uploaded into a national database maintained by the FBI that allows authorities to compare DNA profiles from convicted offenders. The measure was backed by Miami Republican Representative Tom Fabricio.
Back in 2011, we started taking DNA samples from convicted inmates in the Florida prison system. There was a loophole for some of the folks who had been incarcerated prior to that time. And what this bill does simply is it works to close that loophole so we can get that DNA evidence from the folks who had been incarcerated prior.
Until now, only violent offenders had to give their DNA. The new language adds another layer to cover all inmates, regardless of their crime. The state hopes this will make it easier for investigators to identify potential suspects in a criminal case. That's important for someone like Dan Bendig, who works in Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office Cold Case Unit. He says far too often, crime victims never get the justice they deserve because the DNA found at crime scenes cannot always be traced back to the person who committed the crime.
Homicides occur every day in this state, and it's unfortunate. Every day that happens, our best and brightest detectives at those respective agencies go out, investigate those homicides. They exhaust every lead possible, and they try to bring the subject to justice. Unfortunately, some of those cases go unsolved, and eventually they're given the term or the title cold case.
The bill gained support from lawmakers during the legislative session. Florida Smart Justice Alliance CEO Barney Bishop is also backing the new law, despite concerns from critics who say it impedes on inmates' rights.
We need to have that DNA because it can help settle crimes. It can help to figure out who committed a crime and who didn't commit a crime. So this is a case where public safety for all of us trumps an individual right.
Local and state authorities will have until September 24th to collect all DNA samples. An inmate who's already given a sample under a previous law will not have to give another sample. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.